come along. We are nearly there, ladies and gentlemen. Less than 2 weeks to La Liga football returning for free in the UK and Ireland. A month of football. At the beginning, it's free. So it's on via your Sky platform. You go on La Liga TV. You can go on the La Liga TV. Have a look at their website and everything else for the details of how you watch some football for free, to the point where, with all this live Premier League football being given away for free in the Bundesliga and everything, I'm going to be sick of it. 6 weeks from now, oh, no, do I have to watch another one? Yes, watch another one. And so Terry is here. So Terry, it's good, isn't it? I know we've got to be sensible. The lockdown isn't over, all of that. The virus hasn't gone, but it's good to at least release ourselves a bit to watch some football.
Definitely, John. And it's the way to make sure that things are resolved properly, fairly, in some of the major leagues in Europe, which are going to continue. And I'm glad to have it back. Bundesliga has shown us the way. I think the football is very similar to what we normally see on a regular basis, other than the fact there's no supporters in the stadium. But it is literally a case of beggars can't be choosers. And now it's going to be a bonanza of football that's going to take up take us well into July. And I'm really pleased to say as well that with La Liga, which is what this podcast is all about, that there's plenty of meaningful action. So you've got, therefore, the title race, a race for Europe in terms of the Champions League, Europa League, and there's a good relegation battle as well. So much to be concluded, and I'm a little bit, obviously, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, unfortunately for the Bundesliga, Bayern winning that game in midweek, and you think, oh, we're all just, you know, everyone just got into the Bundesliga, and then that's pretty much done now. Thank you very much. But anyway, well done, Germany. A round of applause for the Germans, because they got themselves ready, sorted, give us all a bit of football when we were desperate for it. Have we learned anything? Not many home wins. I don't think, to be honest, I think the sample size is so small that you can't really draw big kind of conclusions from it.
I agree with that. I think that there's been an increase in players picking up injuries, but I think that's an occupational hazard at the moment. It's not the perfect scenario where clubs and players would like longer to prepare for a second. It's almost like a new season, isn't it? But it's not. So things have to be slightly rushed. The extra substitutions allowed makes perfect sense. Clubs with bigger squads are going to have an advantage. I'm fascinated by the I think, as you said, it's a small sample at the moment, but we've always wondered why playing at home, why it should be such a difference, why it should be such an advantage. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting signs now that maybe the importance of the home supporters, we talk about the familiarity with the surroundings and your routine in terms of playing at home is the same for half the season as opposed to when you play the away games, and your routine can be totally different. But it does appear now that the obvious conclusion to make would be the influence of the home supporters to get behind their team and maybe apply pressure on referees. And you see some of these teams that are playing at home and it's difficult for them to build any momentum. Whereas when you see a normal home fixture, a spell of pressure, the crowd get right behind the team and you can sustain that sort of period of pressure. Whereas with no supporters in the stadium, it's home teams are not getting that advantage that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching out because, as I say, 2 weeks of Bundesliga, or, three rounds of Bundesliga matches doesn't prove anything. But by August, we'll have all of this football. And we'll know. We'll have a very good answer, won't we, as to whether playing behind closed doors without any fans on your side of the stadium makes a difference. It could well do. In terms of preparation, it's an exceptional circumstance. Never happened before. Fingers crossed will never happen again. So in terms of having the players ready, it's a new challenge for the players and for the coaching and for the sports scientists, the medical staff and all of that. Some teams will be better and we'll be more ready than others, won't they? And we won't know until the game starts.
No, exactly. And I think Sean Dyche said everybody is going to be in the same position. So it will be fascinating, actually, to see, the preparation for the games in the Premier League and in La Liga. because clubs are going to do things differently. I mean, they've all got their protocols they have to follow. For severe, that includes barbecues and spending time with your teammates and family, which is, I can't believe the players did that. And I can't believe the players then did a picture and put it on social media. I think there was four players, wasn't there, that from Sevilla that got together with their families in a appeared to be a Ever Banega's back garden. So it'd be interesting. I think they had to miss a few days training with their teammates because of the protocol. But the protocols are there in place to ensure safety. But it's going to be interesting to see how each team, each club, has, you know, managed to negotiate their way through a quick mini pre-season for which is going to be an onslaught of games. The clubs with the bigger squads will have an advantage, particularly in Spain. They've got more games in La Liga to play. The temperature, the climate, it's in the 90s in Sevilla, late in the evening. So, you know, to be playing football in the city of Seville and Granada and places like that, with, you know, 90 degrees heat, that's going to take its toll when you're playing every three games or so. So it's going to be really interesting to see who's, you know, who's done best in terms of preparing themselves for the tough task that's going to be coming along. My betting would be on Getafe. I just imagine that Bordalás has worked them really hard. They're not, they haven't moaned about anything, and they're going to get on with it. And they see there's this mini season, you know, maybe culminating in them in what would be an incredible achievement if they can finish in a top four position.
I thought you were going to be cruel about them playing in front of empty stands anyway, but we didn't say that. Otherwise, we'll be inundated, Terry, with complaints from angry Getafe fans.
That's not the case anymore either, is it? It's
to be fair, they make a noise. They're good fans,
and it's
the ones who turn up
much better than it used to be, and rightly so. They've got something to get behind, and that's just one of the many fascinating stories we're going to be witnessing over the next few weeks. You see them above Atletico in the table. Incredible achievement. So it's there's so much to play for, and so I'm really looking forward to it, of course.
Right, you promised, to do a team of bargains. So bargains, because you were asked about whether, you know, whether it's a good place to scout for still, and you basically said yes, and that you reckon that you could come up with a good team of players who moved at a bargain last summer. Now you've said it to me. So €45 million, Paul Smith in goal. have you got designer notebooks? Is that what this is?
It was a Christmas present, and I didn't notice that Paul Smith is at the top of every page. It was
every page.
One of my kids. It's obviously a Paul Smith book, and I wrote my team.
So there are loads of Premier League clubs who are trying to sign this guy called Paul Smith from La Liga on your recommendation.
It would be pronounced Paul Smith, would it? Surely. We'd have to come up with a different pronunciation.
Although the guy in goal, you've got in goal, he's got a fairly English name, hasn't he? Danny Martin. So run us through, give us a quick run through then, Terry, of this squad of bargains to prove your point.
Well, the method that I applied was they had to be signed last summer or January, from one Spanish club to another. So I couldn't bring in someone like Diego Carlos of Sevilla because he was brought in from another league. So all these players were transferred between clubs in either La Liga or the second division. So it wasn't easy, and the goalkeeping one was the hardest one. So I had to go for a young 21-year-old goalkeeper who I saw play for Spain under-21s, who Real Betis bought from Sporting Gijón. So he's clearly one of the best young goalkeepers in Spain, and Betis bought him for €4 million. I'm actually surprised that Joel Robles, due to the difficult season Betis are having, I'm surprised that Danny Martin hasn't been given more of an opportunity. He's signed on a long contract. He's much younger than Robles, and he is going to be the future goalkeeper of Real Betis. It just depends on when Ruby is going to make him the number one choice. It does appear now that it's going to be possibly next season. So the one-year experience of backup playing in cup matches will allow him in the future definitely to be number one for Betis. So he was at €4 million. And then looking across the back, I went for Roberto Rosales, who still surprisingly is only 31. And he Espanyol on loan last season. He returned back to Malaga in the second division, and he's been signed now for I think he came in at €1 million. So I think it's a decent signing, you know, to make. So he's at right back. And then I've gone for Eric Cabaco. This is a strange one, the two centre backs, because I've gone for Cabaco, who's now at Getafe, and Leandro Cabrera for €10 million. I believe he's my most expensive player. He left Getafe in January to go to bottom of the table, Espanyol. And with the money that Getafe got, they spent €7 million on Cabaco to buy him from Levante. So straight replacement. So they're the two central defenders. And it's Cabrera of Espanyol for €10 million. Cabaco, €7 million, who's at Getafe. Then I went for Alex Moreno, who's at Real Betis. He was signed last summer for €6 million from relegated Rayo Vallecano. And I think he's an outstanding player. So I think that was a snip. I was aware of his situation. I was aware that he was going to be sold by Rayo. And he was one of those I really did think that, you know, a Premier League club should really have looked at for that price. I think he's a really good left back. So it's €6 million, 26 years of age. You got Brazales on the right back position. He's obviously older, but only €1 million. So I'm happy with my fullbacks. In midfield, I've gone for a three man midfield. My back four cost me €28 million, along with a goalkeeper, which was quite expensive. My midfield three have cost €4 million between them. So I've gone for €3 million. Edu Exposito. I have to be honest, I didn't know much about. He plays for Eibar. He was signed from Deportivo for €3 million. And I think he's come into Eibar and been pretty much a regular. And I think he looks to be a really good sign. He's only 23 years of age and possibly another one to keep an eye on in the future. Nemanja Radoja, who was a free transfer from Celta Vigo to Levante, where I would imagine clubs were put off by the fact that he never played for Celta the season before, because he was refused to sign a contract. It all got a bit childish, a little bit immature, and the club decided not to play him. Obviously, orders from above, because they went through, I think, three managers last season, and none of them were prepared to make a stand and put him back into the team when he was clearly good enough to play for Celta. Levante picked him up on a free. He's played lots of games, and I think, you know, he's a really good signing for Levante. Classic Levante signing, really. And he's only 22. It wouldn't have put me off, because of I knew the background. I'd seen him play enough in the past. But if you hadn't seen him play much in the past and you didn't see him play at all last season, then it would put you off. But he's only 27. You know, it might be different if he was 30, 31, a year off. That would put me off. But at 27, I always thought he was going to be a good signing for someone. And my third midfield player to where I've splashed a €4 million is €1 million, Yen Ateki of Granada. And he was at Almeria on loan from Sevilla. And Sevilla had a buyback clause of €500,000. So they bought him back and sold him for, I put down €1 million. It was actually €900,000. Sevilla sold him to Granada. I wouldn't be surprised there's another buyback clause. Which, because he clearly is better than a player that should only cost €900,000. And again, he's only 21. So I think he's made a real good impression on La Liga for a 21-year-old. So that's my €4 million midfield three. Up front, I've gone down the right side. I've gone for Paul Tu for €9 million from Girona to to Real Sociedad. I think everybody must agree he's having a fantastic season for Real Sociedad. €9 million for Paul Tu was an absolute snip. I mean, it's ridiculous money. I know he's 28 as well, so plenty of years left in him. I've gone for Chimi Avila, €3 million, from Huesca last season, where he was scoring goals for fun. Osasuna bought him from San Lorenzo. That was the club that owned him. For €3 million, and he's got a €25 million buyout clause. He looks, he's got a chance of being fit for the final games of the season. So 25 million now is a snip for Jimmy Avila, as long as he's completely over his injury. So 3 million was ridiculous. And then my last player is going to be Moy Gomez, who I've never understood his career. I never understood why Villarreal let him go in the first place. He was the classic Villarreal player. And they got him back from Sporting Gijón for the sum of 1 million euros, which is absolutely ridiculous. And he's been a regular this season. He's been, you know, outstanding. He's been fantastic for Villarreal this season. Two-footed footballer. And I can't believe that along the way, you know, a Premier League club didn't pick him up for the money that Sporting initially paid, and then again for the money that Villarreal have paid to get him back. Still only 25 years of age. So that's my team. So I spent 28 million on the back four on goalkeeper, 4 million on the midfield, and 13 million on my three strikers, coming to a total of 45 million.
It's a bargain. So out of this lot, who could you buy this summer? Yanateki strikes me, you know, in that they only paid a million. Clubs are quite willing to take a profit on a player quite often, aren't they, if they've got him quite cheap?
Yeah, and that's the problem with any of the transfers from La Liga to, you know, a Premier League club. You have to pay the right amount of money. It's all well and good me saying Yanateki could be good. If someone comes in and pays a buyout clause of 25 million euros, then I would say no. You know, it has to be the right price. And you know, to get the bargains, you have to look around. I think Leandro Cabrera could be a decent signing for the Premier League if Espanyol get relegated. It's going to be tough for Espanyol to hang on to him. If they, you know, Raul de Thomas in particular, the two players, big money signings they made in January. So I think, you know, I think most of these, I mean, Jimmy Avila, we know the buyout clause. Paul Tu would be difficult to get. Real Sociedad are not a team that have to sell players to raise money for finances. Moy Gomez, I imagine if Villarreal signed him for 1 million euros, I imagine his buyout clause wouldn't be particularly high, so he would be another one. Edu Exposito from Eibar, I imagine his buyout clause isn't a great deal. I would imagine, I guess, his buyout clause is probably something like 10 million euros. So there might be a deal there that, you know, you could offer 8 and Eibar might be interested. So I think that it's all about, you know, getting these players for the right price. That's the most important thing. It's no good me saying to you, Nemanja Radoya, fantastic, go out and sign him and he costs 35 million. If you pay the right price, then, you know, there are. And the point we're trying to make is that it's a little bit more difficult than it used to be. But there are still more than enough players, you know, for clubs in the Premier League to be keeping an eye on. You've got to know your clubs. You've got to know those that, you know, players that don't have high buyout, clubs that don't have ridiculous buyout clauses. You need to know what clubs that have to sell. You have to keep an eye on the league to see which teams might get relegated, because, you know, that often comes with, you know, relegated clubs having to reduce wages and, you know, change their budgets, and that's the place where you could start picking up one or two bargains. I have got a subs bench as well, but they're all loans, which are the players you could have picked up this season. So I've gone for Carlos Fernandez at Granada. He's on loan from Sevilla. I think Alex Vidal was having a decent season at Alaves. He's on loan from Sevilla. Oscar Rodriguez, who's on loan at Leganés. Really good player. He's on loan from Real Madrid. Carlos Alenia could have been picked up on loan from Betis. He's on loan from Barca. He's on loan at Betis. Borja Mayoral, I still think, has got a good future. He's at Levante, on loan from Real Madrid. I didn't even realise this. Rafinha is on loan at Celta from Barcelona. So I don't know what's going to happen there in the future with him. Kevin Rodriguez, I think, is a decent left-sided defender, left-sided midfield player. He's on loan at Leganés from Real Sociedad. And you could have had Take Kubo, who's at Mallorca. Mm. He's on loan from Real Madrid. So they're options as well, because, you know, clubs like Real Madrid would be more than keen to loan players, young players, to Premier League clubs that might get, you know, a regular opportunity. The problem was Jesus Vallejo came to Wolves and didn't play. So it's about getting the level. They feel more confident, Real Madrid and Barcelona, that their young players will go to other clubs in La Liga and will play and be important players on a regular basis. So, but any of those, I think, could do a job in the Premier League.
Right. We also promised that we would have a look at the best ever European players. So we'll do that after a quick break. Welcome back to El Tal and John's La Liga Weekly. We've been looking at some old teams. If you want to have a check out the South Americans, we did two special podcasts on that. And we thought we'd have a look at the Europeans, but we were sort of challenged to do so. So the Europeans who aren't Spanish, so you can't obviously have all the great Spanish players. But however, some very, very talented European players have gone into play in La Liga over the years. So thank you to everybody who has chucked names at us. Thank you to everybody. So I've collated those into a bit of a listener's poll. So I'll tell you that team. Put it somewhere. But also I'll chuck in a few that people have come up with, such as Pierce says, Ter Stegen in goal, Zambrotta, Varane, Thuram, Abidal as his back line, Zidane, Figo, Beckham, Bale, Henri, Cristiano Ronaldo. Then right, Mark, so let's give them a tick off. Mark O'Brien says, Oblak in goal, Thuram, Cannavaro, Varane, Carboni, Rakitic, Beckham, Zidane, Mostovoy, Nihat, Kovacevic. So he's he's changed his mind. He's put Cosmin Contra in for Thuram. But you can tell Mark is a vintage La Liga watcher with those last three names there, Mostovoy, Nihat, Kovacevic. Let's give you, I've got loads more, but Lucas Ilgner in goal, the German, Anglomar, Varane, Koeman, Abidal, Modric, Makélélé, CR7, Puskás, Benzema, Zidane. Well, so we'll chuck in. Actually, let's do one more. Kelvin, Oblak again. Zambrotta, Cannavaro, Varane, Abidal, Modric, Makélélé, Zidane, Cruyff, Cristiano, Puskás. So I've got a few more that I'll share with you. There's lots of good names knocking around here, Terry. I've got a long list. I struggled at right back, but both fullbacks. I've ended up with my team going with I went Abidal and Anglomar. I considered Carboni. I considered Zambrotta. How did you get on?
I've gone with Zambrotta at right back and Abidal left back. I must say I went through each country and did my research, and I probably spent about 2 hours. And then it took me 10 minutes to pick me 11, because as far as I'm concerned, there's probably 7 or 8 players in it that have to be in it. You can't leave them out. So I wrote down all these names going back to people, you know, like Robert Prozanecki and, you know, players like that, the English players, Lineker, Beckham, McManaman, Kieran Trippier, if he continues in the same vein of form we've seen so far, he won't be a million miles away from being our right back. The list was endless. The great Dutch players, like De Boer's, Koku, Cruyff, Kluivert, Koeman, Johan Neeskens played with Cruyff at Barcelona, Van Nistelrooy, Johnny Rep. I wrote down all these names and Paulo Futre and people like that, Pepe at Real Madrid, and from Portugal, Thiago at Atletico Madrid. But when I came to pick the 11, it was quite easy. My problem area was the right back. There wasn't the numbers in terms of international right backs that could have played in this team. So I don't think, you know, I think the three, you know, we've mentioned Carboni, Zambrotta, and Anglomar. They're possibly, you know, the options that were available. I haven't got Paul Breitner and Günter Netzer and Schuster and unbelievable players. You know, Christian Vieri had an unbelievable season at Atletico Madrid. Cannavaro won the Ballon d'Or when he was playing for Real Madrid, when Italy won the World Cup, and it's, you know, players that you just think, unbelievable. But as I said, when it comes to writing down the 11, defence was my issue. I've picked my back four based on the rest of the team, because I've got three athletes and a player that can play holding midfield, and I've got a goalkeeper that can come out of his penalty area and play centre back. So it's a weird looking team, but I've gone with Ter Stegen in goal, Zambrotta at right back, Varane Ronald Koeman and Eric Abidal. So I've got enough pace there to deal with the fact that we've got very little defence in front of them.
Yes. Go on then. Go on. This is what everyone does. They come up with these magical football teams, but go on.
And then I've got a midfield three of Figo, Cruyff and Zidane.
Yeah.
Laudrup, which I didn't mention. I didn't see too many people mention Laudrup.
No.
Laudrup and Ferenc Puskas playing behind Cristiano Ronaldo. So in my team, the three midfielders, Laudrup and Puskas and Ronaldo, they're just nailed on. No matter where you look at all these other incredible footballers, it was easy. I'm picking six of the best players to ever played football. It was easy. I couldn't leave any of those out. I mean, Figo was brilliant at Barcelona and Real Madrid. Cruyff, he's got to be in everyone's team. Zidane, I'd be amazed if he's not in too many. He's an incredible footballer. Laudrup, one of my favourite all-time players. Puskas, three European Cups, five titles, four Pachiches. He has to be in it. And then Ronaldo, the unbelievable period that he had at Real Madrid. And all these other players that I've mentioned, as good as they are, and there's some true greats in there, they're, for me, they were just, those ones were obvious picks. Defence was the hardest to line up. As I said, I've gone through a team that I don't think are going to give the ball away, so I didn't have Makélélé. And I've gone for an athletic back four in Varane, Abidal and Zambrotta, who are going to deal with anything that comes the opposite direction. And then Koeman for his distribution. Koeman can step into midfield as well when they're in possession of the ball. And I've even gone for Ter Stegen, who can play outfield. And if I'm going to play out the back and want possession, it was the reason I chose him in goal, was because of his skills with the ball at his feet, as opposed to Oblak.
Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, Courtois, Oblak and Ter Stegen, the three of them. Badu Ilgner was my other one. But I think we're quite fortunate, aren't we? I mean, look at European goalkeepers playing in La Liga at the moment. Those three are, the three that spring to mind throughout the whole of La Liga, not just now. Three fantastic goalkeepers.
Shall I give you my... actually, let's chuck in a few other suggestions. So Shane says, if Thomas Gravesen isn't on the list, I'm not listening anymore.
It was him and Julia Faubert. They were on my bench.
Yeah. Iso wants Odegaard to get a mention. Pete, the South Americans will smash this lot. We'll have to have a look and compare that. Bigets, I think it says, I feel I need to say Zlatan Ibrahimovic as a Swede with no interest in football. Zlatan, it raises the question, because you mentioned Cannavaro, and the reason I didn't go for Thuram or Zambrotta is that I just think they're best. It's up to you how you interpret the rule. There are no rules, do what you like, but... their best days weren't in La Liga. All of their best days were playing in Italy. All World Cup winners, Thuram and Zambrotta and Cannavaro. But, Cannavaro won that Ballon d'Or for the World Cup. He didn't win it for what he did at Real Madrid in the half season of award. I'm going to show my ignorance. I don't know how to pronounce your first name. John Aldridge, Kevin Moran, Ian Hart, Steve Finney. You see a theme going on there. We could do a British and Irish team at some point as well, because that would be that wouldn't beat the South Americans. I think that's fair to say. People saying Puskas. So Puskas, we should give Puskas a mention, shouldn't we? Because he's so much older than the rest. That's because Zidane and Cristiano Ronaldo won the most votes, because people have seen them play and they know them, they're fresh in their minds and all of that. So you're going a lot further back. That's why Laudrup didn't get so many votes, isn't it? Because people don't remember him. Obviously, Puskas was before TV, so you can't watch a lot of Puskas, but you can watch him play for Hungary. It was one of the sort of football-defining games when they played England back-to-back, 53 and 54, and England thought they were the best in the world, playing this very... it's a very stultified system where everyone's in their position. You know, the right winger stays, because Stanley Matthews plays on the right wing, never moves off the right wing. And then they suddenly played Hungary, who looked like a modern football team running all over the pitch and absolutely slaughter England. And Puskás was the key player in that. And an extraordinary life, because they basically went on the run when the Hungarian uprising happened and the Russian, you know, the Soviet tanks moved in and all of that. So they went on the run, and Puskás ended up at 30, signed for Real Madrid, and played for Real Madrid through this sort of great period. And, you know, sort of overweight, in inverted commas, a major in the army, but in reality they were professional footballers. And he suddenly came to Spain, became a Spanish international. I mean, extraordinary life, extraordinary story, and a sort of revolutionary footballer, which is why I think he deserves to get a mention in these things. I mean, obviously, you look at him, and he's got a fat belly, you know. So compared to N'Golo Kanté, he's obviously, you know, you can't do a direct comparison with modern footballers, but you know, he's historic great. So he's in my team as well. So I'll give you mine. I've got Oblak in goal, because I take your point about Ter Stegen, but I've done what people don't do, and picked a sensible team. Shaq commented on mine. He says put Zidane in the midfield, and then bring Luis Figo on the wing. But what Shaq misses is that I am so uptight that I actually have to pick a balanced team whenever I do one of these fantasy teams. I can't just pick 10 number 10s, which is what everybody else does. So I've got Oblak and goal. I've got Anglomar right back. You're not here to enjoy yourself, Terry. Anglomar right back, Abidal at left back, Varane for the pace, Koeman for the ability, leadership, ability on the ball. But then I've gone Makélélé and Modric. I've got an actual proper midfield in there. And then that gives the platform to Cruyff, Puskás and Zidane and Cristiano up front. So I have lost Michael Laudrup, which I know is tough, and I've lost Figo, which I know is, but management's about tough decisions, Terry. So, you know,
I hope you can live with yourself, John.
I'm just going to have to sit down and have a word with the boys. I've got a bench. Come off the bench if it's not working. But, you know, I want a bit of ball retention. I want to be in charge.
You're the Jose Bordeles of fantasy football. But going back to Puskás, I mean, he was the inventor of the back heel, was the drag back. That was the first time. It's before I was born. My dad used to speak fondly. I had various coaches. One of my youth team coaches at Spurs, a player called Ron Henry, who played for Spurs regularly when they were the first team to do the double. If someone was being a little bit flash, trying to drag back or a back heel, the two players he used to call us, and he was being derogatory, he didn't want us to be flash. The two players, he said, who do you think you are? And one was Puskás, and the other one was Hidegutti, who scored a hat-trick in that 6-3 win for Hungary against England.
Yeah, the false nine. Yeah.
Hidegutti scored a hat-trick, Puskás got two, and if you were ever being too elaborate, the phrase was, who do you think you are, bloody Puskás or Hidegutti? And I was thinking, who the hell are these players? I need to find out more about Puskás and Hidegutti, and over the years, it was an iconic game of football. Puskás is an iconic footballer. You're right. His time at Real Madrid was incredible. Sensational player. Not the perfect athlete by any means, but you know, it was fun to do this. I mean, as I said to you, it was difficult. It was interesting. I spent a couple of hours. It was interesting coming up with names that you'd forgotten about, you know, and some were big names that weren't particularly successful in Spain, didn't spend particularly long there. Some played for some weird clubs. But the names just kept coming one after the other. Georgie Hagi is another one. You know, someone's mentioned Karpin. It's Davos Suka. There's just so many. I mean, even the likes of Griezmann, as good as he's been, doesn't get anywhere near this. So I'm writing down all these names. And when it comes to the final 11,
there's Seydorf, classic Robin, players. Alan Stevenson. Yeah, all of these guys. You know, some obviously Toni Kroos, brilliant player. Gareth Bale gets a mention here or there, doesn't he? Raymond Kopper, if you're going to go back to that early Real Madrid team as well. Benzema, I don't think Benzema got any votes. So let me give you another few. So Jackie goes with Oblak, Carboni, Anglomar, Djukic, first mentioned, Koeman, Makélélé, Laudrup, Cruyff, Figo, Ronaldo, Puskás. Charlie Barca, there's the clue. Hesp, Reitziger, Thuram, Koeman, Van Bronckhorst, Stoichkov, Cruyff, Hagi, Sibor, Kubala, Coxis, so an entire Barcelona 11. George goes Oblak, Anglomar, Koeman, Varane, Abidal, Modric, Makélélé, Zidane, Luis Figo, Puskás, Cristiano Ronaldo. That's quite similar. Is that almost the same as mine, isn't it? So very well played, George. You can be, we'll work together. And now Gareth, who is my mate, he sort of misses the point tiny bit because he's got Alves, Marcelo, Messi, Ronaldo, Eto'o and Suarez. All good players, but there are reasons they're not in our European 11. Yes.
The Germans, but some of the German players that, and I didn't realise, I haven't got a single German player in mind, but you mentioned Toni Kroos, someone mentioned Günther Netzer, Bernd Schuster, Breitner, yeah. Stieliger, yeah. Rainer Bonhoff, people of a certain age will remember him, what a fantastic player he was, but it was good fun looking at all them, breaking them up into different nationalities, and you know, there's been some outstanding players, and the big names, and it was interesting, I don't know if you watch me. The podcast with Alan Shearer and Ian Wright and Gary Lineker do, which is on Match of the Day, and they were doing a list of Ballon d'Or winners, and they made the point, why do none of the ultimate, what we could call Galacticos, they don't come to the Premier League still. And I have no idea why that is. The money's there. The standard of the league is there. The atmosphere in the grounds is there. But when you look at this massive list of players, my team, your team, apart from Ronaldo, who pretty much started his career at United from as a young player, the rest of them, they don't tend to come to the Premier League. So hopefully in you know, the future, there'll be more of the classic superstars. But don't get me wrong, in the Premier League, there's been some unbelievable international players. But the Premier League doesn't seem to attract the ultimate superstars.
We should. We'll challenge ourselves. We can do. Do you want to do British and Irish, or want to do African? Another time.
The British and Irish.
We could do both.
Can do both. Well, no, definitely.
Which
Irish.
One next, then?
African,
right. Okay.
I don't think the British and Irish would take that long.
No, and you don't want to drop Jerry Armstrong, do you? That's your reservation, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the list of Scottish players when I was going through is two. And Steve right, Archibald is one of those. So I think Archie, and that's Dan Egan is another one from Scotland.
Alan Hutton. Yeah, Alan Hutton played for Mallorca.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
Yeah.
So there's not many British and Irish, so that's not when I'd be looking. I've probably got 80 names written down from Europe, and I probably have got Lineker, Beckham, McManaman, Trippier, that possibly had a chance of being in my 11 until I started writing the 11.
This is another discussion, but you've still got a choice with that British and Irish one. Do you go because you've got Lineker, you've got Owen. You've got Aldridge, who was actually really good. So you can't have them all. Well, you can have them all in because you can, you know.
I can't have them all in. Lineker can play holding midfield.
I'm going to have Vinny Samways and Jamie Pollock in my team because I need a shape. So, yeah. Anyway, let me just give you the votes. Oblak in goal. This is so I've compiled them all. Basically, that's it. It's not a million miles away from my team. This Zambrotta, Varane, Koeman, Abidal. We've got Makélélé. He does make it in, and then after that, we do have a bit of a front five going on with Puskás, Cruyff, Zidane, Figo, and Cristiano Ronaldo. So, is this team? Is it going to beat the South American team?
Do you know what? I'd pay good money to watch it.
I mean,
we're talking about a game of football with 22 of the best players in the world starting it that have ever played the game. So I wouldn't have any idea who would be favourite to win that match. Honestly, I mean, it'd be a joy to watch. And how could you ever put either of these teams as underdogs? So, no, I don't think it would be conclusive. to, you know, who would be the obvious, you know, winners. No, I think there's too many good players on both teams to declare one of them a favourite.
Yeah, I would agree. Right. Well, it's been good talking to you, Terry. We'll have another chat, shall we, before the football starts up again, and we'll work on our African team. So you're all time. Get in touch as well. Thank you to everybody who got in touch and gave us your votes and gave us your teams and everything. And, yeah, so send us an African 11. So they must have, the only rule, must have played in La Liga, must be from Africa. Fairly straightforward, isn't it? So it doesn't involve Messi, just in case you're wondering. You can't have Cristiano Ronaldo. And we will be back for another podcast soon. Bye-bye.